If you have a green thumb or have always wanted one, then get ready for Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, along with George Allman. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas, help solve problems, and keep you up to date on the latest developments in the nursery and landscaping industry. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson and George Allman.
Good morning, San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and our guest, John Clements today. And we're going to be talking to you about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I am good. Had a little bit of a surprise rain this morning. About 5 o'clock, I think it was. It was pouring at our house, just coming down in buckets. But I think Adams was saying at his place in Ramona, they got nothing.
Yeah, we had a pretty good downpour as well. Our driveway when I left this morning had puddles everywhere.
Well, it was interesting. I looked at the useless weather app that the Apple phone has. It said that San Diego got no precipitation in the last 24 hours. So I don't know if it was not measurable or it just didn't rain where their weather station is.
Well, on the San Diego Gardener Facebook page, a number of people were commenting that it was raining and downpouring here and rain here. So apparently there's some out there throughout the county, just not where the measuring device is.
Yeah. And it doesn't, and looking at the forecast, it looks like there's no rain in the forecast. Yeah. So I don't know what's going on. Kind of interesting, but I was surprised to get the rain last night because we were sitting out on the driveway for our driveway happy hour that we do on Thursdays, and it was a beautiful night. The huge full moon.
Beautiful moon last night. Yep.
And it was quite nice, and rain didn't look like rain at all. So I was surprised. So now I have to go and check and see if we got enough rain that I can turn my sprinklers off.
I don't think so.
You don't think there's that much.
You know, it really, people ask me that all the time. If we get a little rain, can I turn the sprinklers off now? And until we usually get three good storms consecutively, the ground is, in fact, you'd find even after a deluge, if it was a quick shot of rain, you go out and even your mulch won't be really damp. It just
takes a little time.
It takes a while to penetrate
to get down.
So about the third storm, and I say you can turn them off.
That said, I turned mine off, and not because I think I get enough water. I turned off because now it's cooler. There's a little moisture in the air. I will go out and manually turn on each zone as needed from now through the rest of the winter.
I did go out and adjust all the zones in our yard, backed them off. Went from some of them that were going on 3 days a week. I dropped them down to two, and then just cut some of the durations down. I know half of our back lawn, the front of our house faces almost due south. It's a two-story house. Half of our back lawn just doesn't get any sun in the wintertime at all. So unless you cut the sprinklers back, it turns into a swamp back there. Mm. So
you could grow rice.
I could. Yeah. If I wanted to grow some rice, we could do that. Let's see. We have classes coming up on the 16th, which I guess is tomorrow. It's going to be...
Well, today, if we're airing this today.
Or today, yes. We're recording recording yesterday. Today, the 16th, Edible Bulbs with Kathleen in San Diego at 9 o'clock. And in Poway, it's going to be Backyard Orchard Planning. Oh, I thought it said pruning on the
planning.
Website. Backyard Orchard Planning with Adams.
Correct.
And he's got, 80 fruit trees? I
think he's catching up to me. But yeah, he's got a lot of trees, and he spends a lot of time researching. So it's going to be a good class.
Yeah. And then on the 23rd in San Diego, there is no class in San Diego on the 23rd. And in Poway, it's going to be Bonsai Basics with Richard Wright. And always a fun and interesting class. If you're looking to learn how to get into that hobby, that's a good one to go to. And then after that, I think we are dark.
I think we are done. We have Thanksgiving after that,
Thanksgiving,
and then the holidays.
And then
we're done.
Yeah. So we will not have classes in either store until January.
January. We'll pick right back up.
Yeah.
When did that happen?
This year is just ridiculous how fast this year has gone by.
Yeah, we pick back up on January 4th, the first Saturday in 2025.
Excellent. Nice. Let's see. Christmas trees are due the 25th. The first order is going to be here on the 25th, and the second order is going to be here on the 3rd. Roses are due the 16th. The bare root roses are due the 16th. And the fruit trees are due sometime between Christmas and New Year, although it all kind of depends on weather conditions and whether they can dig them up and get them shipped. But those are the approximate dates that we're looking at right now.
Traditionally, we have always had since I've been here for almost 9 years, the bare root fruit trees get here and we have them out the first weekend in January, typically.
Yeah, usually. We do have poinsettias in the store now, and we'll just be getting more of as time goes on. And the living Christmas trees are all in stock now as well. So if you're looking for a living Christmas tree, something that you can put in your yard after the holidays, we do have a nice selection of those as well.
And we received the sleeved fruit trees.
The smaller sleeved fruit trees.
Oh, nice. We received a large selection of those just this week.
Yeah, a large selection of those. We got a lot of those.
Speaking of sleeved, I frequently tell people that it's very misleading to look at this tiny tree. In fact, I bought some a couple years ago from here that were literally test tube size.
Those were the citrus we were talking about.
And I taught a citrus class here a while back, and a lady purchased a Valentine pomelo, which is one of my very favorite fruit trees. And she said that from that small sleeve that it was in, it has doubled its size since that class. So that's in a few months' time. So don't overlook the opportunity to get the cool stuff in the sleeves, people, because you put those in the ground, they will take off on you.
Yeah, they will.
And you save money.
You save money. And you get more unusual things that you can't normally get.
The citrus supply has improved dramatically over the past year. And the stuff that we can get and have available now is much, much better than it has been for years.
For years.
Started during the pandemic. There was a run on citrus during the pandemic, and a lot of our growers they ran out of stuff to sell.
And those that didn't run out found it difficult to stay competitive with the requirements from the state for quarantine to prevent the spread of the HLB disease.
One thing that I believe we got them back in stock again is the True Dwarf citrus.
We did. We have three different varieties of True Dwarf. We have Mexican lime, Bear's lime, and a Washington Navel's out there in True.
Yeah.
Those are Flying Dragon rootstock.
Yeah. And we haven't had the True Dwarf citrus for a number of years. I think the last time that we had it was when Monrovia was still growing it. And Monrovia has told us they will never grow citrus again. Between the state regulations in California for how they have to grow it to protect the crop from HLB, to the fact that it's not a crop that turns fast enough to make it really profitable for them.
Right.
So they are not going to be growing it anymore. But we did find another supplier that does have it. And we used to get the Flying Dragon rootstock in just as Flying Dragon. It's a really interesting.
It's a neat ornamental.
It's a really interesting ornamental.
Right.
Very, very, very aggressive thorns on it.
They don't look like a regular, they look like a fish hook thorn almost.
Yeah, and they don't have much in the way of foliage on them either.
No, it's mostly thorn.
It's mostly thorns, yeah. They do produce fruit, but it's completely inedible. I think it's solid pith inside. I don't think there's very little or no actual edible flesh in it.
Right.
But from an ornamental standpoint, it's a pretty neat plant.
I think our Poway store has one out.
We have one, but we can't sell it.
No,
but we have one, but we can't sell it.
But it's ornamental.
It is interesting.
From Four Winds Growers that you got that?
I can't remember if it was. I don't think it was Four Winds. It might have been France.
Okay.
Might have been France. Evergreens had a lot of stuff available too. And they, as a lot of you probably know, Evergreen closed their, they sold their retail yards, but they still are doing wholesale. And as a matter of fact, they got stuck with a ton of citrus. Because their growing yard ended up in one of the quarantine zones, and they couldn't sell it. They had thousands and thousands of dollars worth of citrus.
Well, that's our fear as well, because for us, the quarantine zone is Poway Road, right. And we're just south of it.
It's getting close.
Right.
It's getting really close. So yeah. So it's at least at this store, it's kind of a balancing act of we want to have citrus in stock and available for everybody, but we don't want to overstock it for fear that if they do find another infected tree, then that will be the end of citrus sales at the store.
And then
we have to destroy the stuff that we have. We can't even get rid of it. So it's an unfortunate situation, but hopefully that's not going to happen. So we will see. There's not much going on in Balboa Park. Although the new botanical building is supposed to open next month
for December nights.
Oh, for December.
I think you said December 7th. Is that not correct?
Yeah, whatever. I think it's the first weekend.
We were there Tuesday. Capri and I, you know, we work on the Midway, and so we took a little drive over to the park, did the zoo to look at all the plants, but we also walked over to the botanical garden building, and it is gorgeous.
It's really well done.
They did a great job.
And it all looked really nice.
Gone. But it will officially open the weekend of December nights.
Yep. Beautiful.
Excellent.
Looking forward to actually getting inside it and walking around.
Yeah. I think it's going to be pretty spectacular. I can't wait. It's been almost 4 years now.
Four years.
Yeah. That's a long time to, it's one of my favorite places in Balboa Park. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming it's still going to be free.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's free. Yeah.
Because I know there was some debate as to whether or not that was going to change as they got the renovation done. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clement. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with more right after this.
There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson and George Allman.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We're talking to you about all kinds of things going on in your garden. If you'd like to ask us a question or have a suggestion or want to have a suggestion for the show, you can email us at gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com. And remember, Anderson is spelled S-E-N, not S-O-N. And we did get an email from listener Margaret, and she said, "This past summer, I had a lot of anise butterflies on my dill. I loved watching the large caterpillars as they grew, but unfortunately, some were attacked and killed by ants. It was awful to walk out to see the large caterpillars that were alive and well in that morning, covered with ants. Made me sick to my stomach to see what had happened. The ants didn't bother the monarch caterpillars or the swallowtail larva on the citrus. What can I use to get rid of the ants? The ants have to go before I plant anything else in my yard. Thank you for your help, Anne." I don't know that I would be surprised if it was the ants that were actually killing the caterpillars. I think that they might be a secondary problem from something else that killed the caterpillar. My first thought would have been tachinid flies, going after the caterpillars. And then once they attack the caterpillar and the caterpillar dies
or is disabled enough,
then the ants move in and scavenge.
I would think that as well. I don't think the ants would get to the caterpillar unless it was hurt or killed from the fly.
Yeah.
Or some other cause.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't think there's any control that I am aware of tachinid flies in the garden. No,
anything that you would do to reduce their populations would be wholesale to kill everything else.
To get rid of everything, yeah.
And it's a dilemma because, frankly, I love tachinid flies to come to my garden. They're a predating insect
right.
that's going to help me with my insect control. So it's which, you know, what do you do?
Yeah. So, what's the trick? Yeah. See, we had a ton of monarchs this year in our butterfly garden, and none of them survived to pupate into metamorphose into butterflies. Oh. They would form the chrysalis, and then the chrysalis would turn black, or the caterpillars themselves would get parasitized before they even had a chance to pupate. So
a lot of times too, the plants that people are planting to attract butterflies are the very plants that also attract tachinid flies, you know, and some of the ladybug larva and things like that, like anise and yarrow and cilantro, gonda seed, Queen Anne's lace. And so it's a real dilemma because you're trying to attract two things that are essentially enemies.
Yeah.
But the ants are a bigger problem. I mean, clearly we have to deal with ants in the garden regardless of what happens with the caterpillars. But I think you're absolutely right. I think it was a scavenger issue after they were probably killed by tachinid flies.
Yeah.
After the fact, yep.
Yeah. As far as ant control is concerned, diatomaceous earth, you can use that.
Again, the taro makes a outdoor trap that the ants will go to and take the bait back to wipe out the colony.
Mm-hmm. And then you said
Grangetto's carries a product called KM Ant Pro Liquid Ant Bait. It's a little expensive, but it is listed for organic gardening, and it is used in commercial groves, orchards and groves, to help keep ants at bay.
That's often, Greg Rubin uses that quite a bit too. One of the things that will happen, even with your natives, you'll get woolly aphids down in the soil that will go after your ceanothus, particularly other native plants. And so the ant control for us is a huge problem. And the biggest issue is where Argentine ants are from in Argentina. They actually predate on each other. They have colony fight colony. But all of the Argentinian ants outside of South America think they're all one big colony.
So they don't fight.
They don't fight.
They're the same family.
And they keep themselves controlled down there. We do not have that same situation up here.
Right.
In fact, there is a great program on Radiolab on PBS from quite a few years ago that ground zero for the ant wars was actually just on the east side, or west side rather, of the 15 over on the other side of Lake Hodges, Eucalyptus Avenue, and I think Via Rancho Parkway. Because there was one colony there where they were fighting each other and they were trying to get this colony to, it's a great program if you ever want to Google that and look it up. But the ants are a huge problem for us.
Well, we know that's just in our fruit trees with them, you know, protecting and farming aphids and mealybugs
scale.
One of my persimmons, my coffee cake persimmon, every time I harvest, I have to shake my hands all over the place to get the ants off me. There are so many ants in the persimmon tree, but not for the persimmon. There's scale on that tree that needs to be addressed separately. But
well, it was interesting. I was talking to Jamie Ogle, who's the head of Lloyd Pest Control here in San Diego one time. And he was saying that one of their big sources of business was controlling fleas in people's yards. But he said once the Argentine ants moved in, the flea populations dropped dramatically because the Argentine ants predate on the fleas. So he said their flea control business dropped off quite a bit, but the ant control business on the other hand picked up. So we have not had, I can't remember the last time I found a flea in our yard. It's been years.
Yeah,
years
fleas and years. Aren't a problem like they used to be. That's absolutely right. And and in fact, up by Camp Pendleton, there is a road there called Rancho Las Pulgas. In Spanish, pulga means flea. And if you read diaries of people that first came to San Diego, the pioneer types, the first school teacher at Mason Street Schoolhouse, she talked about how godforsaken San Diego was. We all love it, but people hated it then. And she said the fleas would literally eat you alive back then.
Well, so, it was definitely not the most hospitable of places. Well, when you look at the landscape around San Diego and what was, you know, the city that we live in now, the area that we live in now, is dramatically different from what it was even 100 years ago, just because of the of all of the thing, all the plants that have been imported and planted throughout the city. So
I'm always struck when I returned from the East Coast and how green it is back there compared to here, you know, much larger groves of trees. But then when I look at historical photographs of San Diego, it's completely different. It's much greener. There are more trees, there are more plants everywhere than when I look in a historical picture. You know, so we have changed the landscape to make it much more pleasant than those people that were complaining about the fleas.
Yeah, that is true. And you know, if you want to see what San Diego looked like back then, just look east of the 15 at Miramar. I mean, that's basically what it was just, you know, some rolling hills and
chaparral,
which is interesting because you go up to Northern California, and it's rolling hills and oak trees all over the place, both on the west side of the San Joaquin Valley and on the east side of the San Joaquin Valley. The Gold Country, Highway 49, it's absolutely beautiful. Rolling hills and massive oak trees all over the place. But we just don't have that closer to the coast down here. You get up into the mountains, you know, around Cuyamaca and Julian and that area, and it's quite nice, but the closer you get to the coast, there really just wasn't
the more
much
barren
here.
It became.
There just was not much here at all at that time. So Margaret, diatomaceous earth, there are other chemical controls that you can use as well on the soil to keep the ants under control. But it's like we said, we think that it was probably the tachinid flies that got to them. And unfortunately, there's really nothing that you can do to control those. Just hope that the population in the area doesn't get so out of control that they go after
one other
everything.
Possibility. So one of the things that you'll find will happen, our ants they've evolved to survive flooding. And so what happens whenever we irrigate, you will see them vacate wherever there are in a nest in the soil, carrying all the eggs, and they will all look for higher ground. And this is actually from the evolution of all of the behaviors that they learn where they're from, that there's frequent flooding. So they have just devised this way to escape and then be able to continue life another place. And you'll see them all run up into your trees or high ground. So frequently what I will do too is I'll water, then wait for, you know, I'll just look around looking for nests that are evacuating. And there's a product called Spectracide Bug Stop that works pretty well. So once I see the nest, you can, and it comes in a 1 gallon container, and just spray the nest. And that's a pretty good control for at least getting the big populations.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes I'll just irrigate an area to see where the ants are going to come out and then hit them with the bug stop too. And it's a little faster than the baits and things
that. Baits are effective in that they take it back to the colony,
right?
But it's not quick.
Right.
And if you've ever used them in your home, you may have a small trail of 30 ants. You put the bait in, now you have 4 million ants.
Right.
Because they all come in to get it.
They
but
all
then
come in to get it.
A day or two later, they're gone.
So. Yeah, they do. They do move on. So thank you very much for the email, Margaret. We do appreciate it. And like I said, if any of you out there have a question for us or would like to hear us talk about something in particular, feel free to email us at gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com. We would be more than happy to address it. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with more right after this.
There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson and George Allman.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements. I found a website called thehomegarden.com, and they had a Gardening 101 quiz on there that you could take. I don't know how often they change it, but I actually printed it out so we can test you guys. And I got 10 out of 10 when I took it, but we'll see what
100%.
100%. Yeah. It was pretty easy. What was war gardening also known as? Extreme weeding, victory gardens, doomsday preparation, or patriotic plots?
Well, that's an easy one. Victory gardens.
Victory gardens.
But I didn't know there were distractors. I thought I would have to come up on my own. This is a lot easier.
Oh, yeah. An objective test. Yeah.
Which of the following is an example of a perennial flower? A dahlia, a periwinkle, a peony, or a geranium?
I would say geranium.
Mm-hmm. Actually, they have
a periwinkle.
They have it listed as peony.
See,
really?
Really, yeah. Because, I mean, when you say perennial, it comes back. I mean, it lives, but here they lose their leaves.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, I'm
well, we don't even, well, you and could
you got,
grow
wait a minute, you got that right?
Peonies, but
I got that one right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they completely go away.
Too. And yeah,
yeah,
you know,
like
yeah.
a dahlia. Yeah.
Right, like a dahlia would.
Yeah. Which...
Yeah, it kind of surprised me as yeah. well.
Okay, I'm going to protest that.
I'm protesting.
You're going to challenge that one? Let's see. If you planted the three sisters, which crops would you be growing? Tomato, potato, and peas, onion, celery, and pepper, wheat, corn, and tomato, corn, beans, and squash.
There you go.
That one.
That one.
Corn, bean, and squash.
Corn, bean, squash.
You yep. got it. What is honeydew on a plant? A sign of aphid infestation, bee activity, a drop in temperature, or too much nectar?
Aphids.
Yes, it is. Which of the following plants is endemic native to Canada? Garlic, mustard, Canada thistle, wild strawberry, or wild parsnip?
Well, that's a trick question. Could that be the Canadian thistle?
That seems too easy.
Too easy, though.
Let's say garlic.
Wild strawberry.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And wait, you got that one right?
I got that one right.
Wild strawberry.
Yeah. I think he had his computer open.
Wow. How many flowers must bees collect nectar from to make 1 pound of honey? 2,000, 20,000, 200,000, or 2 million?
Depends on the flower, too.
I'm not probably the most, the larger number.
2 million.
Sure.
2 million.
2 million is yep. what they say.
Wow.
Now, I don't know who went and counted that.
Yeah.
But they probably extrapolated yeah, over. Yeah.
They had little clickers
yeah.
as they were going by.
And they had to follow the same bee.
Yeah.
For a long time. Let's see. Which of the following is not in season in June? And it says Ontario in parentheses.
Ontario, this test, LA or Ontario?
This test must be from Canada.
Toronto.
And the answers are cherry, zucchini, rhubarb, or lettuce.
June in Ontario.
I'd say rhubarb in Ontario.
I
think it'd be cherries.
Zucchini.
Zucchini's not
zucchini.
Right.
Zucchini.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow, I failed.
Well, I'm bombing this test.
Yep.
Let's see. Which of the following vegetable seeds would you be more likely to start indoors in, and again, Ontario? Broccoli, radish, peas, or beets?
I'm trying to think, growing up on the East Coast in the snow, what do we started almost everything indoors.
And those are all cool seasons.
Yeah.
They're all cool seasons.
Yeah.
I'm going to say beets, though, of those.
Oh, they have it broccoli.
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 Okay.
Yeah. Which of the following plants would do better in full sunlight? Campanula, primrose, hydrangea, or forget-me-not?
Calendula.
Campanula.
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 Okay.
Yeah. Campanula is what they have.
This is in Ontario also.
Right.
Keep that
could
in
be.
Mind.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I don't know. It didn't have it in the parentheses on this one, so I don't know. What colors are a monarch caterpillar? Orange, black, and white, white and orange, yellow, black, and white, or brown and black?
A.
Yellow, black, and white.
Yellow, black, and white.
Yeah. Which was C.
Oh, was that C?
Okay. Yeah. Was C.
But I thought they were, I always thought they were kind of a celadon green color. So I don't know. Anyway, well, if you want to check.
Well, that was tough. Gosh.
A little tougher than I remembered. So anyway, if you want to check that out, it's you can go to thehomegarden.com. And
well, I tell people all the time when they've gardened elsewhere, baby, you aren't in Kansas anymore. I mean, gardening here is not like gardening in Ontario, Canada. I'll tell you that.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I am sure.
Do you think it's to stay on that train there or anchor on that a moment. Do you think it's harder here? I mean, it's very easy because we can grow all year round in for things, but I think we have a larger pest issue than I had growing up back east where we would garden and work on the orchard.
I think we have bigger pest problems because the pests also don't
exactly
go to sleep,
that's my
right?
point.
So
yeah.
So you have year-round pests. We have challenges of terrible soil most places.
Oh, really bad.
Just awful, awful soil. We also have, particularly for us in the southern part of the state, even LA has different water than we have. You can grow plants much better in Pasadena than you can in San Diego if you're irrigating, because we get the dregs. The worst of all the water comes to us from the Colorado River, and it's terrible for the plants. So we have a lot of challenges here.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, pest. I find the pest to be the most difficult, constantly battling something.
True.
There's always something. Right. There's always something going on pest wise. I don't know that you can ever. I don't know that you can ever get rid of it.
I didn't have that problem growing up on an apple orchard back east. We didn't have as many rodents and, you know, everything just constantly stealing the fruit as I do here.
Now, did you have any fungus problems back there?
No, not really. I mean, you get apple scab, some coddling moths, but, you know, you'd spray early in the season and take care of it. But not like here. Here's a challenge. You're constantly, you have to be very vigilant here to be successful.
Yeah, that's one thing that I don't think we have a serious problem with. At least I haven't heard of it being a serious problem here in Southern California, is coddling moth.
It's really not a big issue.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's random, but it is here. We just don't have a large problem with it. I take apples off the tree without any hesitation and just start eating them.
Yeah.
Well, they've been having some wildfires on the East Coast as we speak.
There's one in Manhattan.
Yes. Yeah. And I remember hearing one of the news reports this week, and they said, we're having an epic drought. It's so horrible. And they said, we haven't had rain for 40 days. And I thought, 40 days? Try 4 months, yeah. 6 months, 10 months that we don't get rain.
Yeah.
And so for them, it just goes to the point that they get so much beneficent water that is so good. We have to irrigate everything. And when you think about they talking about having a drought, not having water for 40 days. And for us, we literally go most of the year without water.
And then we get our measly 11 inches.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, when you think about it, our average rainfall is what, 13 inches a year, somewhere around there. I mean, that's nothing.
Yeah.
That's why
it's significant news when we have 30 inches or 28 inches or something in a given water season.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was listening to the radio on the way into work this morning, and they were speculating as to what's going to happen.
You're going to talk about
what's going to happen this
again,
year,
right?
Well, I'm assuming that's the weather pattern that we're in now. But yeah, I don't know what to expect this year. Let's see what happens.
Well, and San Diego's been cyclical for millennia, you know, and so one of the things about global warming people will talk about is, oh, well, gee, we have floods now. San Diego had a flood, so then they just attribute it to global warming. That's poppycock, because there have been regular flooding periods, you know, 1916, 1937, 1943, where San Diego River was bank to bank. I mean, across the entire floor of the valley. Otay River flooded and destroyed an entire town in 1916. So this is just the California pattern.
Well, it's one of the things that frustrates me about Sacramento is we go for a period of we get a rainy period, and then it starts to dry out, and we get into a drought situation, and they start to panic, and just as the panic really starts to set in and they start coming up with these draconian measures to save water, it starts raining again.
Right.
I mean, it's about a 4 or 5 year cycle. And it happens almost like clockwork. And it has for as long as I can remember. So I don't know what the answer is. It'd be nice to be able to save
I think that is the
water.
Answer is, I mean, obviously homeowners and everybody with all of the, you said draconian measures, there are a lot of, you know, water on the, only 2 days a week, this amount, et cetera, and raising the cost of water to make it too costly to water. But I think the real answer is when it rains, capture that water somehow. And I'm not talking in your backyard 500 gallon tank, but statewide, more infrastructure,
more reservoir
to capture that.
Do you remember in 1991? So I've been involved in this business for so long. I can remember dry years, wet years, but 91, we were at the terminus of one of the worst droughts in California history. And it was just horrible for like 89, 90, 91. And I had actually worked for some of the biggest water users, and they were publishing their name in the newspaper.
Oh, I remember this.
Yeah. And Maureen O'Connor was mayor. And it was Helen Copley, Joan Kroc, Linda Smith, who's Joan Kroc's daughter. So I'm working for like three of the top five water scofflaws, you know, and they're publishing here, and their water bill is $12,000 a month back in 91. Yeah, can you imagine?
That's a lot of water.
So anyway, hey, Capri, they were publishing and they were like ratting people out to each other. And then the Miracle March hit. And it really took care of the water for like the next 5 years. And we changed cycles again. Yeah. So once you've been here a long time, you realize you're right, Ken. It's like this 5 year more or less cycle. And then there's like about a 25 year cycle of big floods. And that welcome to California.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to step on you, but I was telling Capri not to be angry with our water bill because we're always going to be pretty high with those 90 fruit trees. But if it's not 12,000, so we're okay.
You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more right after this.
There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson and George Allman.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. Saw an interesting fact the other day, and I wasn't aware of this, but citrus, which is all over California now, was actually introduced to California by the Spanish missionaries around 1769, which would have been the time that they founded Mission San Diego. And the first citrus orchard was planted at Mission San Gabriel in 1804. And then you had said that there was a big citrus orchard in downtown Los Angeles.
Downtown LA, there was a very big citrus orchard. In fact, I publish frequently in San Diego Gardener Group and on my blog photos of downtown LA. There was a fellow named William Wolfskill, who was a fur trapper from Kentucky. They came on the old Spanish trail. He and many others became Mexican citizens and married local girls usually. And then he had the most amazing big orchards of oranges. He also had bananas. He also had vineyards in downtown LA, down where Olvera Street is right now. And he also was the first one to mass produce Valencia oranges in California. And they came from James Irvine's ranch in Irvine. And then that proliferated from that one Valencia tree. And then in the gold rush, he was selling those oranges for a dollar an orange because scurvy was such a problem with all the gold miners.
So, that's mind boggling.
That's lucrative.
That's very lucrative. Very lucrative.
Although, you know, it's interesting. I had read that during the gold rush, inflation was so rampant in California that it was actually cheaper for people that lived in San Francisco could put their laundry on a ship and send it to New York to have it cleaned and have it sent back. And it was cheaper than having it done in San Francisco. Of course, you didn't have any clothes for 6 months, but you could do that. And the gold rush was also the impetus for the American clipper ships.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They were building them on the East Coast as fast as they could turn them out. And they wanted to build the fastest ships that they could so that they could turn them around faster and get more stuff here. But these guys would build a ship on speculation. Mm. And then they would just load it with anything that they had. They would just fill it up with cargo, whatever they could get, they would put in these ships and they would send them around to California, and they could sell everything that was in the ship. And pay for the ship in one voyage, and that was obviously before the Panama Canal. So they were going down around Cape Horn, probably the most famous American clipper was the Flying Cloud.
Oh yeah.
And she held the record. She held the record from New York to San Francisco up until about 20 years ago, I think it was. And then that record was beat by a high performance sailing yacht, not a ship about the size of the Star of India. So she was really, really fast.
Yeah.
So it was an interesting time in maritime history of of this country.
I did a quick CPI inflation calculator, John. That $1 Valencia orange in 1849, the 49ers, right, is worth $41. So that was a $41 wow. orange in today's money.
That's more expensive than a sumo.
Yeah. It is. It is. That is. So going back to the oranges, though, there are pests that get into our oranges, right? That we there were going to touch on. And
well, you know, I
you have a good story.
I have a great story. So I had a beautiful orchard on my home and on Tecolote Canyon, and I had terraced this thing out. I've got like 50 fruit trees back there, and my favorite of all of the Valencias is Midnight, which is great, seedless. And one thing about oranges too, in Japan, they have what they call a 2-year orange. You can only do that with Valencias, and they will leave that orange on a tree for 2 years. And that is like gold.
Oh, really?
To have a 2-year orange. They are amazing. I've done it in my own orchard. I'll just mark them and go, that's a 2-year orange, and I'm going to wait. And it's incredible. But this beautiful Midnight Valencia, I go out my hill and I could feel eyeballs on me from somewhere. And I'm looking around. I have no neighbors. So I'm thinking, what on earth? And I turn around and there is the biggest rat you've ever seen. It's sitting in an orange, looking at me, fat, dumb, and happy, like the caterpillar from Alice in Wonderland, just going like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? And I told him, hang right there. I went in the house, got something, and let's just say I took care of it.
You resolved the problem.
But I tell you what, rats are probably our biggest pest problem when it comes to veggies, trying to get them started when they're seedlings, citrus, all fruit. They'll go after pomegranates.
Oh my goodness. I went and harvested a bunch of pomegranates about 2 weeks ago, and every third one I touched was empty.
Yeah. Now the rats get in there and just hollow them out. And you have to be on top of the rats all the time. And people will ask me, well, when can I take a break from the rats? And when do I reach a state of equilibrium? And it's just, they never.
Never. Yeah. In fact, I posted something on the San Diego Gardener Facebook page recently because people were commenting about their little seedlings being eaten, and everybody automatically defaults, oh, it's snails or slugs. Right. And it may not be the case. And rats and mice, and I've set up trail cameras and have video evidence of rats and mice eating, particularly brassicas. Mm-hmm. I've had them in the top of broccoli, just gnawing the broccoli down. In fact, next week we're going to have Farmer Roy here. We should talk to him about his problems with brassicas. I wonder if he has rat problems up there.
Yeah, I'll have to ask him about it.
Touch base with him. But we have.
I think Farmer Roy's going to be here today.
Yeah, well, for next week.
Oh, for next week.
Next week. but interestingly, I agree with you. The rats in pomegranates, in peaches, everything, they just climb up the trees and decimate.
Yeah. It was, I guess it's about 3 or 4 years ago, I planted in our garden, I planted a pretty good stand of corn, and it grew like crazy. Mm-hmm. It was amazing how fast it grew, produced a bunch of ears of corn. I don't think I got 3 ears of corn out of it. I'd go out and every ear was completely stripped. Wow. They would climb up into the corn and just chew everything off of it.
Oh gosh.
So yeah.
So well, I did a consultation. I do a lot of garden consultations and go out and give people plans for how to take care of things. So I had a client, they said, all of our things are getting mowed down. We put little seedlings out and then they're just chewed down to the nubs the next day. I said, you've got rats. No, we don't have rats. No, we don't. I said, yes, you've got rats. I can tell. And I can tell from your citrus trees, you've got rats. No, I think that was from a caterpillar. I said, no, it's from rats. You've got rats. So we're having a glass of wine, kind of post-mortem in a way. We're having a glass of wine. And they said, well, we just insist we have no rats. And so literally, sun's going down. And at that moment, two big rats run across the top rail of their fence. And I said, entered into evidence right there. You have rats. And so you have to keep up with them. And the thing with rats too, they are brilliant. Do you remember Pinky and the Brain?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Oh, I love Pinky and the Brain. You know, he's going to take over the entire world. Yeah. You know, visions of world domination. Rats could do it.
They could do it. According to Orkin, I saw this on KFI news site the other day. They published a list of the most rat-infested cities in California. We rank up in the top four. Ooh. San Diego.
That sound like a good thing.
It's not a good thing. Los Angeles, San Francisco, Sacramento, and San Diego. And wow. I would argue that a good chunk of those are in my yard. We are battling them constantly.
We used to see them in our yard. I just haven't looked at them recently, but we running along the top of the fence.
That's usually the big entry point. Yeah. And especially if you're on a canyon or something.
Yeah, we bought up to a green belt.
Yeah,
so
that's what was my thing too. And the thing with the rats, they're so intelligent. They're so brilliant. Frequently, I'll get one in a trap. And if they see Uncle Bob, you know, in a trap, they just go, okay, whatever you do, kids, don't go near that. they have this way, and they will learn from each other. So what I find is I have to be on top of the game, constantly changing my methods of control, because literally you use a wood trap, I'll guarantee you next time that wood trap won't work. They also, when they get nailed in the trap, they let out a little wee-wee, and then it marks it. And then the other ones go, I smell Uncle Bob. He died right here. We're not going near that thing. So you have to begin to think like a rat.
That's interesting. I use the black tomcat traps.
Those are great.
And I leave them in the garden all year round. So that they never get, and I just keep resetting them wherever I need them. I move them as necessary.
I must have smarter rats than you, Georgia. Well, and then it finally got to the point. I would use the wooden traps. I would use the tomcat traps. We were using ratinators. And they're so smart, they will get off of that. So I finally, on Amazon, found these traps that look like medieval torture devices from China. And they were all metal. And they were just really oddball looking. But then those worked for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just find, just have in your arsenal, have enough stuff so that you can...
You have to have a deep bench.
You have to have a very deep bench to keep up on the rats. They're really tough.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You talk about the cities in California with... rat problems. Melanie and Blake and I were in San Francisco a few years ago, and we usually stay at the Hilton in the Financial District, which is on Kearney Street. And right across the street from the Hilton is Portsmouth Square, big park area. And we had been up in one night. We had been up in Chinatown for dinner. And we were walking down Washington Street, which skirts along the side of Portsmouth Square. And as we're walking down the street, I looked over into the landscaping and the bushes. I've never seen so many rats. I mean, they were everywhere, and they were just scurrying all through the plants. I mean, there were dozens of them. And that was just the little section of the park that I could see from the sidewalk as we were walking along. I was stunned. I've never seen a rat infestation like that before in my life. They were everywhere.
Well, you know, John said that the people said we don't have rats. When I talk to customers and say it looks like rat damage, a great number of folks will say, oh, we don't have rats. We're very clean. I have heard that countless times since I've worked here. We're very clean. We don't have rats.
Mm-hmm.
I say, okay.
Well, for my kids, one of the most infamous incidents in their young childhood was back in the days, we used to have to drag the trash cans out. You know, they weren't the big mechanical lifts. So I'm taking a couple of the trash cans out from the side of the house out to the front across the driveway. And as I'm doing this, two rats jump out of the trash can. They jumped onto me and then ran down my leg. And my son still to this day says, oh my gosh, Dad, I remember when you were just screaming like a girl and flailing all over the place. So people just, that's one less thing you have to worry about is rats in the trash cans these days.
You've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements. We'll be back next week with another hour of Garden Talk. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you for joining us on Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, your source for gardening, landscaping, and horticultural news. Still have a question for the Garden Talk crew, or want to learn more about the show, or how to become a guest or sponsor? Send an email to gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com. That's gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com. Or visit walteranderson.com. There's more professional gardening advice next week at the same time on Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery.